You just found episode 81 of the Mentoring Developers Podcast. Welcome.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Welcome again to Mentoring Developers. This is a podcast. This is a YouTube show. If you are not sure exactly how to go about securing your career in software development or how to get started, you're in the right place. Today, I have a special guest, Kevin Mack. Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Nice camera, nice background. I think is looking good. I'm sure you agree. So today we're going to talk about all about preprocessors when it comes to styling on the web browser. So if you have a website and you want it to look a certain way, you might know about something called cascading style sheets, which is a way for people to tell the browser what a particular element should look like. There's just a little bit of art and a little bit of science behind that. It's called CSS. However, this may not be the easiest way to work with styling. So some clever people have invented what we call preprocessors that actually do something in a little bit more clever way and then turn that down into CSS. So the browser doesn't know any better. It just processes the same old CSS, but for software developers, it makes a much better experience. So now we have different options that we can use to achieve preprocessing. One of the popular options is LESS, and another popular option is SAS, and there are other options. But so we're going to talk about LESS and SAS today. Now, I know a little bit, but I'm no expert, so that's why I've invited the expert. The expert in the Midwest, but the topmost pre-processing I don't know. I'm just saying it. So, Kevin, what's the deal with pre-processing?
So, that's a great introduction on this. And again, CSS is the styling. It's what makes a website look like a website. So it brings in your branding. It creates the components. It's the structural side of it. It goes outside the DOM. It's what brings your DOM to life. It's what makes the interactions actually happen and where something's placed. Now, writing CSS gets really complex and it becomes hard to maintain and manage. And that's where these like preprocessors, like LESS, SAS have come into play. They're really all about maintaining your code and making it a bit easier that one developer or multiple developers can go in there and make an update, create different components in there. So we start introducing things like functions. They have mixins. And it's to get over some of the tedious things that you do in CSS, and it kind of magically does it for you. But when you get in there for the first time, you may say like, why am I doing this as opposed to just writing like regular CSS? There's a lot of benefits inside there. Again, it's all about maintainability. And then even if you're not interested in writing CSS or learning about like building out your own component library or something like that, these become very important because a lot of the core libraries that are out there, like a Bootstrap, Tailwind has pieces of it that's written in SAS. A lot of these core UI libraries like Material Design are based in these preprocessors. And so they have these individual components that get compiled out there. So even if you're not building your own, it's really critical and important for you to understand what is happening behind the scenes. And so then when you need to customize it, you know to do it. The cool thing about it is like all these files, they're their own kind of, they're built in their own languages. So you don't run like a .less file. You don't run a .scss, which are the SAS files inside the browser. You compile them. So you write them in their languages and then they get compiled and they have an output. So it's similar to like, you know, you have a, you're not just putting a, I'm trying to think, I'm blanking on language that I was like a PHP file. I'm like, no, you put one of those out there. But like, a .NET project, we'll go on that path.
Right.
You're not, there, it gets compiled from like your VS Code, or you're running a build process to then put it out. The same thing happens with these preprocessors. You're not actually running a SAS file on the browser. You're running a .css file, and these are just the ways to build it out, similar to like any language, like a Java, a Ruby. You need to compile it together to put it out there. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. But people listening, somebody might be thinking, what is a DOM? So in this podcast, what we do is we break down all these terminologies, so we don't want to exclude anybody who's not privy to the secret information. So we'll let them know about this secret word we call the DOM, which is the way we describe the structure of a page, right? It's a document object model. And it, for a layman or a layperson, just think of it as a representation of the page as the browser understands it, right? The browser knows if you added an element to the page, a piece of text or whatever, it gets attached to a data structure that the browser is dealing with. And then it displays it using whatever magic it does. So that's what he's talking about. And so preprocessors are important. Why? Because it is a little tedious to work with CSS directly, and there's a lot of things you can't do, right? And this is something that we have done in the world of JavaScript now, where we have an advanced version of JavaScript and the browser doesn't support, perhaps, but we don't care because we compile it down. We dumb it down for the browser because the browser is very efficient at running it. So there's a discrepancy, I think, there's sort of an impedance mismatch between what we're good at, we're able to look at and automate, and what the browser can do. The browser doesn't care if it's, if you have to write 100 lines of CSS to achieve something, maybe it takes 5 lines in a preprocessor. So that's pretty good. Now, my question is it a good idea for a new person to invest their time in learning? Because now you give them so many choices. Earlier, life was simple. HTML, CSS, you're done. But now we have these preprocessors. So in your opinion, is it a good idea to invest time in learning one of those? Because then you have to pick one. Am I right? Or should you learn all of them?
It's a great question. And, first, before learning one of these preprocessors, you learn CSS. You work with the core language because end of day, these are just trying to help you maintain and write better maintainable CSS. That's all it is. So if you don't know how to write CSS in the proper way of doing it, and then you're moving to one of these other languages, it's just going to be more complex. But I do want to say one thing. So it's not similar to maybe some like the JavaScript, like shorthands. About a decade ago, there were some like popular JavaScript shorthands that came out. Like there was jQuery, which still is in existence, but slowly going away. What was the other one? Began with a D, but let's just say there was jQuery, and then there was something called CoffeeScript.
Right.
So what people started learning was they learned how to write jQuery, and then they started learning how to write CoffeeScript. jQuery isn't actually JavaScript. It's a wrapper that makes it easier to write JavaScript. And it actually came out to have compatibility across many browsers. So a decade ago, IE, browser support for certain things was very difficult to write just vanilla or native JavaScript. So you always had to write some kind of like fill and backup per browser. And jQuery made it really easy. But then it got kind of misused because people stopped learning JavaScript and they just learned jQuery. And then when they ran into issues, they didn't actually know how to debug JavaScript.
Right.
And then secondly, things like CoffeeScript came out. Now, CoffeeScript actually required you to learn JavaScript, but people started to just learn the shorthand of CoffeeScript, and it was doing a similar thing. It's now people started becoming masters of CoffeeScript without knowing JavaScript. And the web world today has kind of shifted over for JavaScript world to learn, like ES, true syntax, everything from ES 5 or 2015 and above, and then uses things like Webpacker or things that compile it out to the other languages like Babel. So like the JavaScript world has kind of like cleaned up. Now the CSS world, is, you know, there's not as much. So we kind of stabilized the CSS world around like really 2011. So thinking about that, it's crazy to say it was 9 years ago, almost a decade that CSS kind of maintained. And why I say it was about 2011, that's when responsive web design came out and the modern browsers. And with that, CSS has always had like a really great way to write the language and have fallback, where JavaScript didn't have that. And so with the complexities of then CSS coming around with the responsive world, you weren't just writing code for the desktop or just mobile, like an MDOT solution. You're writing a component that needed to be fluid from small screens to large screen. And then these languages came out, these preprocessors came out to help maintain it for you. And I think like maybe we jump over and I show you like where some of like the best ways to get started and the documentation for it. Does that sound good? And especially we have this new setup, which is really, really awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Setup of this, so.
Now you're sharing your screen. So
Cool. So you can see my screen here.
Absolutely.
I'm over the years, and I self-taught, because, you know, when you were learning web development in the early 90s or mid 90s, there were some books that came out, but there weren't classes about it. How you learn was by going to the language's website. To this day, I always tell people, whenever you're learning anything, don't try to go to some third-party site where someone's interpreting how to use the language. First, start with the actual core language. So Les's website is lescss.org. And then SAS's main core website is sass-lang.com. They both have awful domain names, but these are their official websites here.
Yeah.
Les is an acronym. It stands for Learner Style Sheets. Awful acronym. What is PHP also has a really bad acronym. It's like PHP stands for PHP, isn't it? Like
no,
the first
I think it's.
It's like the PHP Hyper Protocol. I think that's what it is. PHP.
I thought
hyper
it was
protocol is PHP.
Homepage. HP is homepage. So I'm not sure what P. So we can look it up. Well, let me look it up because definitely PHP stands for homepage.
Yeah, but and possibly. But basically, when you come to Les, this has the core things that you need to go. And I'm going to show you a quick little demo on these. So as I mentioned, there's variables, there's mix-ins, wide range of things. And then primarily a lot of helping with how you use media queries inside here, which are the, you know, how you identify from small screens to large screens. Mm-hmm. Now, Les kind of first to market that got really, really popular. It then became shadowed by SAS. And SAS was created by some really great developers and people that worked on some other core languages. It first came out only available in a Ruby gem, which is like the core ways of installing the package itself. In today's world, think of gem similar to how NPM works. So node package manager or modules work. But SAS was kind of the first to plug and play inside of it, where Les was its freestanding language. Hmm. But today, SAS has kind of won that battle between the two. So Les was like first came out to the market. Bootstrap was written in Les. A lot of core public libraries were written in Les. And then everyone moved over to SAS because SAS became more powerful. But it's also because SAS came out with multiple versions of it. There's Ruby SAS. I'm a huge Ruby SAS fan. I really, up till this past week, and it's 2020, November 2020, I've always been using Ruby SAS. I've been hesitant to move over to what's called libsass that came out from a C# implementation of it, meaning that it was embedded directly inside of tools like Visual Studio, as well as Microsoft tools. So a lot of IDEs had it built in, where you didn't have to install anything. The issue with libsass versus Ruby SAS was it was a partial version of SAS and it didn't include things. Now, there is what's called Node SAS, which is probably the most used version of it. This is now taking over libsass, as well as the implementation inside of IDEs. Node SAS runs from a Node package manager. It too is also a lighter version of it. LibSAS was probably about 60% of the library. NodeSAS is about 95% of the library, but they left out some core pieces of it. Dart SaaS is the most up-and-coming version of SaaS. It has the next version of it. Ruby SaaS is becoming more and more deprecated, meaning not available, and they're focusing on things like Node SaaS just because it's a little bit more powerful, and it's all written in Node.js, JavaScript-based, and it has better compatibility implementations, and it's very, very quick to compile.
Yeah.
But I'm angry about it because a lot of my libraries, I write a lot of libraries in SaaS,
right.
And I'm now having to rewrite them for Node SaaS. Sorry, that's a lot of information. Any questions about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So my first concern, alarm bells are going off in my, oh my God, different versions. Now we're going to have this problem of compatibility. And one of the most frustrating things I've ever experienced in my life is compatibility. Because I lived in the .NET world. Then I also lived in the open source world. And I could never bridge them together. And within those, as you know, between these packages, even from Node packages and even Ruby gems, there are so many things that don't work together. And so once you have different implementations of one language, I'm thinking this is going to be a nightmare. Is it?
Oh, it really isn't. So there's a few things. If you're following the core documentation, and you know, I talked more about the last one, but SaaS has this learn SaaS. If you're following the best practices, it works across the entire board. There's a few advanced level things that you will run into problems with it, but unless you're doing something like what I do is like I write libraries and plugins that are open source. For the average user, even if you're a power user, you're not going to run into the same complexities that I run into. So the compatibility issues, you don't have anything to worry about. If you're pulling in something and you're running it, it's just what environment does your business, does your company, or do you like working in? Do you like working in Node packages? Do you like running from an IDE? Do you like doing XYZ? You're completely fine. SaaS also has what they call deprecation warnings. So they have their own warnings from the command line. So you see as it's building it, it'll give you warnings like, hey, next release, this is going to be removed. Stop using unquote and start using the escape. And they'll give you recommendations and they'll tell you how to rewrite the code. So right. Then when there is an upgrade or you're moving to a new version of it, it gives you the warnings months and months or even years in advance.
Well, that sounds good. But so imagine I delivered a product or I finished something in 2018. I'm thinking it's done, but 2 years later, it may not work anymore if I upgraded the framework. So I have to.
Yeah, it'll still compile. That's the big thing. Like it will still compile, and it will tell you literally like, hey, you may need to downgrade to this version. Like. I use NVM, which is a way for me to manage Node on my machine. Different projects I run, I have to run 10.19.0 Node, which is an older version of Node. Mm-hmm. And other ones, I'm running the latest 14 point whatever it is today. So it is a common thing to do that. Okay. I mean, I could go down that path of managing versions, but SaaS for you. Don't be even concerned about that.
Okay.
Don't be scared about the versions of it.
Awesome.
With that, let me show you some of the things that I've done in SaaS. And like,
okay.
This is what's really powerful. So as I mentioned, I've written my own framework. It's called UIArc.io. I would love to do a demo of that for this group. It's very similar to what Tailwind is today or Inuit CSS, which are huge scalable CSS frameworks. A lot of my libraries, as I mentioned, are written in SaaS. So like if I open up this is a common thing that happens. So do you see this at the top? This is called a repeatable pattern CSS.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually something I wrote and it says like include this pattern, red, orange, blah, blah, blah. And it's passing it. And the output of this looks like this.
Oh, nice.
So you can, and then if I were to add like more things inside here, so let's just go in here and wherever this is in this HTML. And so you can see at the top, that's even how the colors are. This is all written in SAS, but it outputs the CSS for you, which let's just chunk this and do. I wrote this plugin And now I'm going to add more here. So you should see more added at the bottom. So I just added more. It may be hard to see, but it's looping through these. So it's the same for every end, which is a hard thing to write. But if I look at the compiled CSS here, it does it all for me. So Sass compiles CSS, and you have these like little shorthands to do it. So like this was the Sass. You don't really need to know much because when you're implementing or using something like this, you just say, hey, what is my pattern that I want to use?
Right, right.
And then it outputs for you. And then another one that's really critical and comes up all the time is I wrote a CSS-only scalable library, which is unheard of in the CSS world. So look at this. Do you see the text scaling up and down?
Yeah.
And I wrote all the math functions inside here. This is actually an output of CSS, but it's written in Sass. And why it's written in Sass is I say there's a maximum and then a minimum font size. So I say, I don't want my font size to ever get bigger than 72, but I never want it to be smaller than a 16 pixel. So those are my two variables inside here. And then this is how it works. And it goes in. But when you're implementing it, all you say is scale up to 18. I want it to go as small as 1 pixel. And this is my breakpoint on it. And that's how it works. So this is the only code that you're writing here. And you're just passing in the variables, but it outputs really dynamic things like this. So it does all the complex behind the scenes to write the CSS for you. So if I look at what is scalable one here.
Right.
Scalable one is all this code.
It's awesome.
And all this math that happens behind the scenes. Well, now, this is... This is what you could do in SAS.
That's what...
I'm going to show you...
It's a good
job.
Yeah,
sorry.
I had to do that.
Yeah.
It's looking for an opportunity.
Yeah. So I'm going to show you like the you know, they say you can learn CSS and within 5 minutes. You can learn HTML within a minute. All very true. But you're not a master of it until you spend a lifetime in it. I'm probably a master of CSS and HTML, and I know the ins and outs. I could be quizzed nonstop on it. Sass and Less are the same way. I'm just going to show you the 5 second where to get started on this. I'm using CodePen.io. Huge shout out to CodePen. Big fans of them. Great resource, and especially if you're trying out different things. So inside of CodePen, you can go in here and you can go to CSS, and you can say what preprocessor you want. Let's start with Less. Save and close. All right, so I'm going to write this demo. I'm just going to call it Less versus Sass demo. I'm going to make it be a private. I'm a pro user here too. All right, so inside here, I'm going to write some DOM or HTML, and I'm just going to put a div and an H2 inside here, and I'm going to say lorem 2, which is, if you ever see lorem, this is like the... it's like gibberish text. It's meant to like, designers use it a lot. It's like fill in the blanks. And I'm just going to do a paragraph and I'm going to do a larger lorem inside there. All right. So this is my DOM, my HTML. It's this. And DOM, why it's called that is written in Node. So X, if you ever see XHTML, it's a node base. So XML is the core basis of it. That can be a whole nother discussion at a later time.
Right.
All right. So we're going to write some less here. So this is how you write a variable in less. So I'm just going to call it
And you're able primary. To write it in Sass because you selected, or is it less? You're able to write it in less because you've selected that preprocessor in CodePen.
Yep, exactly. And so this is a variable. I'm going to call it primary color, and then I'm going to create something called secondary color. So, and it's going to be red and blue. And now these could be hex values too, but I'm just doing these for the sake of this.
Right.
Now I'm going to write a selector. And I'm just going to call it selector name here. Very awful name. And I'm just going to say color red. All right. So color red, we're going to add this here. We're going to say class selector name. Now, this is how basic, you know, classes work. Right now, this is just CSS. So I've just written a selector, the brackets, and I have my property and my value.
Right.
So, you know, the key value pairs in CSS.
And the dot here represents that you're talking about a CSS class, or you're talking about a class a parameter attribute.
It's a selector. Yeah, it's a selector. Yeah, so this is a class, a selector.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to include a variable. So we're going to call it primary color. And now it's the same.
Right.
But now if I change the secondary color, it becomes blue.
Right.
Now let's look at what this looks like when it's compiled out. Do you see that? It's passing that variable and it's actually outputting it.
Mm-hmm.
Now you may say, well, why do you want to do that? So let's just say we have foo and we have background color, secondary color, and then whatever.
Right.
So now if I had something like this, and we're going to say color white here. So now if I look at this, that variable has been passed in two different spots. So what you typically do when you're working in a preprocessor is you put all your variables at the top. Right. So we want to change our secondary color from a blue. Say you were developing it and you just put in whatever you wanted it to be. So you could identify colors very quickly. But then the designer is going to come in at a later time and be like, oh, our primary color, or actually our secondary color is more like a navy color. And they update it. They update in one spot and it cascades all the way through.
Right.
Very cool.
Very easy to modify in just like variables in a program. Perfect.
Yep. And now one of the other things you can do in these languages is like extend and use what's referred to as a mixin. So let's just create this. And we're going to call this a demo. And it's going to have the color be primary color. So we're going to use a variable here. Oops, primary color. Passes a variable, which this is going to export again out. It's going to compile out as the hex value. So it's like this is being replaced and replacing this here.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to have a background color of line. This is hideous, but now what I'm going to say is I wanted these exact classes that are inside demo to be inside of selector name. I say demo. Do this.
Oh.
Now when I look at the compiled out,
it's going to
selector name
that.
And these are the same. So it like copies all the internal and puts it somewhere else. Really, really powerful.
And that's what's now, called a mixin.
That's what the mixin is called. Now you can add arguments inside here. So let's just say we're going to say at color, which is how you do a variable, mm-hmm. and we're going to say at background.
So you're passing in default. Two parameters, okay?
So you can add defaults. Similar to like any language, we're going to my background default is lime, and my background or my color, my default color is primary color. So now we're going to change these variables that are being passed in to be these that are up here. So what this is saying is demo mixin,
mm-hmm.
default color is primary color. It's going to register here and color here. Now, because I added these arguments, if I look at the compiled code, demo's now not getting compiled out, which is interesting, which is cool. But if I look at selector name, and I'm including this, look what selector name is.
Right.
It is bringing in those defaults. Now, what I can now do is, let's change what the first thing is. We want it to be black and what? Excuse me. We want it to be white and black. And now let's look at what that compiled out to.
Super.
So it's a very simple example of how a mixin works. And I don't have to do both of them. I could also just say at background if I just wanted to do the second one and override just that. So it brings in the default. So you can write these complex things in reusable pieces and extend them out. All right. So that's less. That's 101 less. Now let me show you what's a little bit more powerful is SAS. I'm a SAS fan. Now there's SCSS and there's .SAS. .SAS is completely deprecated. It's from the old school days when SAS came out. Don't use it. Don't ever use a .SAS extension. Always use .SCSS.
Okay. Weird. There's syntactic differences between them?
It's the first version of it versus the new one. If you're writing .SAS, it won't work.
Okay.
If you see that, the library's old, just ignore it, move past it.
All right.
It would be like, if someone was, what were the old .NET databases that are pretty much like Excel's?
Access. If you see a Microsoft Access database, run. Very far.
Run away from it. It's very similar to that. That's the best comparison I can make for those that will get it. So this is how you write a variable in SAS. You start with a dollar sign. Mm. We say this. And then, you know, color secondary. So we'll go back to these examples, blue.
Okay. All right.
And then let's do selector name. And then how we include those is like color primary. So this is the big difference, is just variable.
It so starts far with
just a dollar sign.
The at sign just versus the dollar sign. All right.
Yep,
so
exactly.
Far, so good.
Yep. And so different variables here. All right. Not major. All right. Now, what is really, 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 really cool in SAS is what's called, you can do an extend, and you can do a pseudo selector. A pseudo selector starts with a percent, and we say demo. And we can say, oh, okay, let's bring these in here. All right. So remember how in the last one I made that mix in with the arguments and didn't compile out?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to do something here just so we see this coming out here. Just ignore that I'm doing this. I just want to show you one thing here. All right. So demo here, it starts with percent and you put a selector name there. Mm-hmm. Let's look at the compiled. Demo does not come out here. Mm-hmm. But you can see that selector name does because there's a property.
Right.
That's the other thing to call out. So less in SAS, they don't compile empty classes. They just get removed. They don't compile out.
Sounds good to me.
So if I want those classes, I say add extend percent demo.
Hmm.
And now I look at the code here and now it's bringing it in here.
Oh.
Yep. Unlike what we saw in less, I can also say extend demo here. And look what happens. It puts it on one line. So it compiles them and you share those properties. Now, let's say we wanted to do something like this. We want this to have a span. We could say foo p span. Watch what happens. Foo p span gets it.
So it's clever in how it's putting together these classes, and obviously you're reducing the number of bytes you need to send over the wire. So at the very least, it will improve performance. Pretty good.
Yep, exactly. And so the other thing is you can do something like this. You can follow BEM, which is a very popular methodology. So we can have something like my block name here, my element here, and I can have a modifier here. So the and here treats it as an append. So let's just say color red. Let's do position absolute. Oops. And we'll do a position relative here, just so you can see these kind of like compile out. So remember how those were there? You see how it added the element to the block and added the modifier there. Those are these ampersands act as extend. And it's the same way, like if these were an anchor, we can do an and hover color blue.
Hmm.
And then that gets out as like a pseudo class. Now, that's like the 101, but the one thing I'm going to show you also that I haven't shown is a mixin. So this is very different than how it is in less. You start it with mixin and you give it a name, demo. And what we're going to do is we're going to kind of do twofold here. And I'm going to say at include demo. So when you use the mixin, you say include and you start a mixin with this name.
Right.
So this is now going to cascade the same way through that we had, but we can add arguments here. And just like less, we can have variables pass through.
Nice.
So and treat them the same way.
So the idea for having these variables in there would be to make it reusable, maybe across projects, perhaps, if it's something common, right? Because you can change it and you don't have to keep writing it again and again. That reusability is a pretty big thing, pretty good thing to have in software. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's really the basis of how these things work. is the variables, the mix-ins, the extends. But as you're learning them, like what I always say is like you going into CodePen and looking at like what's actually getting compiled when you're doing it is really, really critical. And then going back to like some of the libraries that I have, so I'm nice transition on CodePen. You can see like some more advanced SAS that's written here. And this is just kind of like a quick, so this is a mix-in and this is how this is all built. And you can see that it has like ternary statements inside here. So if this condition is met, how you go from all these if statements. So this is doing all the potential options and then returning it for you. And like, there's even like small, like things that you can write. Like if I wanted to convert something from a pixel to a M or a REM, you can create a mixin called like REM and say, all right, size and then base. And then what this will return is size divided by base times one rem. So now in this selector, let's actually remove all the stuff. Say, let's say font size equals rem 24 and base size 16. Clear this all up here. So,
I want to see this.
Give me 1 second. Oh, actually, I'm going to do it as a function. Sorry, my bad. All right, so do you see this?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the hardest things to do is the conversion. And like I always say, something should be written in REMs. So this is the one for one. So the base font size, typically from a browser, is 16. So that's a root font size for accessibility. And then you're passing in this size.
Right.
So let's ignore the second one. And let's say we want to convert the selector name from 16 points. So a default, like H2 is typically, or like H1 is 2 M's. A H2 is typically a 1 M. Okay. Let's change H2 to font size RAM 30. Oh, that's the same thing that it is. 72.
Nice.
Do you see how this is now 72? So if I inspect this, look at what this compiled out to be, 4.5 RAMs, but it's computed at
72 because you're
72.
Because you're, so it's a little bit smarter.
And I actually now, look, yeah.
People don't
compiled code.
Not everybody knows what a REM is. So we're talking about a unit of measure that is not pixels because of the different screen sizes and the and you want your text to not be fixed to a pixel size, but to the relative size of the viewport, something. Explain that to me, because I know what M's are, but REM, I'm not sure what that is. Go for it.
Yeah. So REM versus an M. REM is based off the root font size, where an M is based off the inheritance or cascading effects from the parent container.
Okay.
So like, you know, if we did something like this really quick here, so we said all divs, let's just say all paragraphs have a font size of 24 pixels, right? So this is now 24 pixels. But I want to say, ooh, any span that's inside of a paragraph, which we have one here, has a font size of, let's say 50 pixels, right? So this is one for one. So this is going to be 50 pixels.
Right.
Now, what we can say is 2M. So this is actually going to make it be 2 times 24. Because the parent here, which is a paragraph, is 24 pixels. The span inside here is 2 M's is multiplying this. So this output's 48. Now, if I made this a REM, this is going to actually be 32 pixels. Because the root font size of a browser is 16. So if I change the root font size to, let's say, font size 50 pixels,
Okay. So everything is going to be bigger.
Well, this is going to be huge. Mm. But this is now actually going to be, this is 100 pixels here.
Right.
But if I made this an M, this would be 48 because the parent is defined as 24 pixels.
Right. Okay.
So a RAM is the root font size and an M is the parent of it. Mm-hmm. There's use cases for both of them, but this is a super powerful, easy, like if you're writing your first like function in SAS, right. There's nothing easier than this. And you can write a statement that then is, you know, you can do a conditional saying like, oh, is it a REM or an M, and pass that through here. But you could also just do something as simple as this and just say M and multiply it by an M here. And then you could create something that's a global variable like base font size 16. And then you can also then add that to your root here, which is font size times 1 pix.
What is that dollar? What is it? Colon root? I haven't seen this before.
Oh, that's it's the outermost DOM element selector. So you, if you want to, traditionally it's the HTML tag.
So that's I didn't know you could do that. Is that SAS or is that CSS?
That's CSS. Wow. Yeah, so it's been a part since the beginning.
I am a CSS expert. Yeah, everybody knows that.
Yeah, so this is the same as doing this.
Wow.
These became popular in web components because the HTML tag in modern day HTML, it's not required to have an HTML tag anymore.
Okay, so
this is
everything I have known so far. I need to throw it away. I need to sit at the feet of Kevin Mack and learn HTML and CSS all over again because I feel like. What do you mean you don't need an HTML tag anymore? Never heard of that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but so check this out. So we're going to go 20 20 here, and it's doing all the calculations for me. So it's changed that to 1.5 M's, which is really cool. And you can see the root font size is 16 pixels. But if I want to change my root font size to 50 here, it's doing all the math. So it's passing the variables to both of these, and this is going to be whatever 20 divided by this is. So it's doing all that crazy math behind the scenes for me.
This is amazing.
That's why it's so powerful.
And you're just touching the surface here, right? There's a whole lot more. And obviously, for a new developer, this is already very powerful. But what would be the most complicated thing you could do with it? Or maybe an advanced thing? Is this something you could show if you already have it in CodePen?
Yeah, well... Let me show you one thing here. I'm going to open up my GitHub. All right. So I'm doing a major rewrite of this, but basically this library, it's my SAS library, and the new version is going to come out here soon. That'll be a little bit more broken down. It's just going to be, the basis of this.
Nice.
So I break down and organize my code into partials. So anything that has an underscore doesn't get compiled out as its own file. But anything that, so that's a part of like just the Ruby SAS side of it, which was inherited through, and same thing with less. These are considered partials. So these are like all my variables for just colors. And these are how I make the colors. And then I organize all my code. Like here are all my objects. Here are all my grids. So all the grids are included in here, which includes the tabular, which are table based, the grid, properties, the floats, the flex. And then those are all included in here, which then are all included in a parent file. So what this allows me to do is organize all my codes into like sections and blocks. So then I have this reusable like UI arc framework, but say I'm like, oh, you know what? For this project, I don't need to have tabular data, I uncomment it, it doesn't get included in. So it's like including different projects and pieces that you need. But the beauty of all this is it's all here, it's all reusable. And I built all these like tools for you to use on your projects, like REMS to M, string replace, scaling type, a unit, gutter creator, extending selectors, how mixins work inside here. And then if you actually look at where these are, there's a file right here that includes all of these. So you have a final output of this that compiles down to one single CSS file. that has all these different sections maintained inside of it. And the beauty of also doing this is it's heavily documented on each of these pieces. So if I were to just open up one of these, the documentation is kind of like inside here. So we go to grid, grid's a bad example. Let's go to flex maybe. So each of these gives examples and references on how to build out different pieces and the comments inside here and how to actually use the library. But these don't actually get compiled out from the language because comments get removed.
Right. So that's the beauty of these, any kind of programming environment, but in this particular case, if you have a preprocessor, you can understand it in a way that a programmer should understand it. You can document it. But when you're sending it to the browser, and I'm sure everybody's aware that you don't want to send extra bits because that the page load speed may be affected. So this is really good stuff. And we're definitely going to have you back for to talk about your framework because it is awesome and it needs an episode on its own. So this is great stuff. If people have any questions, about anything that they watched today, and if they have any questions for Kevin, go ahead and send me an email, us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Also, you can tweet at us at Mentoring Devs. You can also ask Kevin directly. Also, we're going to have links for the UI Arc framework and SAS and LESS and all that good stuff on mentoringdevelopers.com/episode81. And go ahead and go over there, check out the audio version of this podcast. It's going to be very interesting without the demo, but still useful. And then yeah, you'll have the links so you can check it out. And I'd love to hear comments. So this is really good. So I mean, definitely I learned a lot. I mean, I learned a great deal. I learned a lot more about LESS and CSS than I had learned on my own. And that hour spent with you, Kevin, was very valuable. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. And that, like, this is one of my favorite things to talk about. So I hope, you know, anyone that's watching or listening to this, learn something new. Check out my code pen. I have a bunch of different like sample things. My framework is publicly available on my GitHub, which is also a nice transition. I am doing a major, new release of it. As I mentioned earlier on, the annoyance of, Ruby SaaS. So I'm actually moving all to a libsass or a node sass support model. So in the next really week or two, I'll have an update with that out there. So we already built it out. We're using it on all of our stuff at work and it's just going to get better over time. So please use it. Let me know if you have any questions too.
Awesome. So I put the link over there down below. They can see that and go to that link, check out all the cool stuff Kevin's doing and let us know. And cool. We'll see you very soon. Very soon. And then, you know, subscribe if you haven't.
Again, thanks for having me.
Okay. Bye, everybody.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.